Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
What's shaking? What's cooking? Probably some lasagna, probably some turkey. Maybe you go a little pumpkin pie, whatever it may be. A lot of people right now cooking, and they're listening to the Zach Gelb Show in the background. Well, if you're in your car, you're not cooking. Maybe you are. Who knows, though? I saw a video once, a Barstool video, when Portnoy went to a Buffalo Bills tailgate, and a guy was cooking pizzas out of his car. So you could be cooking in your car. But if you're getting ready for the Thanksgiving festivities tomorrow, maybe you're listening to us on Sirius XM, Channel 206, the radio.com application, maybe a little Alexa. You have an Alexa, by the way, Trace?
I do, yes. Don't use it that often, I'll be honest, but I do have one.
Yeah, I don't really use my Alexa either all that much. I have these great Bose speakers, and I just got new Bose headsets, which are phenomenal. And I also got another pair of Bose headsets. And when I got those Bose headsets, the second one, there's noise canceling. So I was playing some Bruce Springsteen over the weekend, and I put the headphones on my ears, obviously, and I started to record myself just talking and singing. I know I'm a loud person just by nature. I didn't realize how loud I was being. These headphones, I got two pairs of Bose headphones. They are tremendous. They are phenomenal. They're sensational. But I also have these Bose speakers, and those things, they really bump inside the apartment. So that's why I'm more so Bose instead of Alexa.
Yeah, I think the Alexa's kind of lost, not, I don't want to say lost her its luster, but
no, come
it was
on.
Cool.
Hey, Alexa, listen to the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It's true. Should be doing that.
Come on. What are you doing? Or just listen to CBS Sports Radio or any of our great affiliates across the radio.com application. You say application or app?
I like app.
I go application.
I like it.
Ross Tucker once, and he's a Princeton guy, so he's an erudite guy. He goes, applique? He goes, what's an applique? He goes, it's app. Who calls it an application? What are you, an old geezer? For some reason, I never just go on the radio.com app or go check out the Starbucks app or go check out the Twitter app or the Facebook app or whatever it may be, Instagram app. I always said Instagram application, Twitter application, Facebook application, Starbucks application, radio.com application. And some people don't like that. But here we are. Now you look confused.
Oh, because I'm just thinking, now you say the word application in full, it's kind of a dumb thing to call, like, the application or the apps applications.
Why?
Like, it's, what is it, like, what are you applying?
It's just not. Just call it an application.
I know.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm just saying, like, the whole, like, iPhone thing to call, like, Twitter application in the first place. Twitter.
I don't know. My brain, since it's
platform,
always, it's pretty much always has food on its mind. When I think app, I think of apps like appetizer. So I've just always gone application. That's just the way that, for some reason, I say some things that don't make sense. Maybe that's one of them. So you're telling me I should go by app now?
No. I'm not saying you. I'm saying in general, like the word application. I feel like now, like when you say it in full, it's weird to call Twitter. Like,
oh, gotcha.
Like not like overall the entire app store. Like why are we calling these things applications? You're not applying anything.
Yeah, but it's like a program that you use. You know, it's an application. It's just
I guess I just don't use that. I'm not a smart man, so I don't use the application.
Do you want the actual definition of application?
Sure, maybe that will help.
I don't even know if it's gonna make me look better or you look better here. Application. Let me get on my...
Cause I feel like when I hear application, short for apply, I'm going to apply myself. I'm going to apply whatever, like physically.
Application,
doing
a formal request to an authority for something.
Yeah, see?
So I'm asking for some authority to open up my Twitter application. Or the action of putting something into operation. Hey, open up the Twitter application.
Okay.
It's going into application.
Told you, I'm not that smart. I had the first definition
in my brain.
You're
probably right. You are probably right. And for being fair, everyone else calls it app. I'm the only one that calls it application, probably. And you think a lot of people say application?
No. I'm just saying, I was just more talking about the overall word. Like, okay. Obviously, we shorten application to app. Everyone just says app, except for, like, you know, people like yourself, application. But when you hear the full, I never hear, like, Twitter application. So I'm like, when you think about, like, the actual genesis of the word application, it's just like, I wouldn't use application to describe Twitter. Maybe platform. Like, hey, open up the Instagram platform. Maybe we could call them Plats. Plat. Hey,
no,
check out the Twitter
Plat.
Work.
It's just because everything.
Twitter, these apps
so, for example,
platforms.
It is called the Twitter application. We short it to Twitter app. Like,
right.
You understand that?
No,
correct?
No. That, yeah, I. That's
okay.
Yes.
So, how do you promote most of these things on the radio, on television? You got a certain amount of time. So, if you keep on having to say application,
I think we're talking about two different things right now.
I don't get what you're
talking
about. I'm
not talking about application versus app. I am talking about just the overall word application.
I get what you're saying. Why are we shortening?
No. I'm asking, why is the application even you? Why is that picked to be the word to describe?
So you don't even think they should be called apps?
No,
is application.
Yeah,
so what do you want to call them?
Platform. I would say platforms.
Twitter platforms. Please.
They're not applications. You're not applying anything.
Okay, gotcha. For a second, I was trying to just have a fun conversation.
Sorry.
No. For a second, I thought you did not know that application is.
Oh, no. Sorry.
Short for.
No.
Or long for.
Got
app.
That.
Gotcha.
Got that from.
Okay.
If I didn't get that, we'd be in trouble.
Just making sure. But when I talked to Ross Tucker, what I was saying, it was almost as if he knew, but it was almost as if because of how we all call it apps, it's like, well, what's an application? And I'm sure there's some people out there that go, app, and then they hear me say application. Well, why is this guy not saying app? So it happens. Regardless, though, we're coming to you live, as always, from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. That may have been the dumbest six-minute conversation I think I've ever had. I don't think I made a whole lot of sense. I don't think you made a whole lot of sense there.
Well, that's what we bring to
the table.
Can
we agree on both that? That was a pointless, dumb conversation?
Oh, yeah. It was just a common observation once you brought up the word application.
Gotcha. Kevin Carter coming up in a few moments. We'll talk college football, the top four. That does feature Alabama at number one, Notre Dame at number two, Clemson number three, Ohio State four. And we'll also talk about his Florida Gators and if they got a shot in at number six to make the college football playoff. Let's go to Onsides Offsides. Hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Trace, pull up your email app or application to pull up the Onsides, Offsides questions and let me know what you got cooking.
All right, I pulled up the application.
Ah, trendsetter. They know.
The first question will go like this. One of the biggest matchups of the NFL slate this week is getting pushed back as the Steelers-Ravens Thanksgiving night game was now moved to Sunday afternoon after three more Ravens players tested positive for COVID today. That ups the number of Ravens players in quarantine to 7. This isn't the first time, though, the Steelers' schedule was juggled, and players like Juju Smith-Schuster and Eric Ebron voiced their frustration with the game getting moved to Sunday on social media. So Onsides or Offsides, Steelers players have a right to be frustrated that this game is getting moved from Thursday to Sunday.
I think they would have looked better if we knew about this Ravens strength and conditioning coach that wasn't following protocol before a lot of these players complained on Twitter. In the moment, I was like, all right, this stuff is going to happen this year. Stop complaining. They have the right to be frustrated. I would just be extra careful and extra sensitive in how you voice that frustration because there's bigger issues in the world now. There's some people that are going to say, well, it's just a football matter. Let's not incorporate these other issues. But we're all being asked to adjust and change and alter our lives right now. And if your big adjustment is, all right, your bye week got pushed to week 4 on short notice, and then you're supposed to get an extra long weekend, and now that game gets pushed to Sunday, it's not the end of the world. So I will say they have the right to be frustrated. I won't question or I won't say that someone can't say something because they're upset with something. So I will then say that they have the right. I just don't think they should have been tweeting the way that they did today. It came off to me as a lot of whining that was going on. But I'll go on sides. They do have the right.
All right, Zach. So the movement of that Steelers-Ravens game to Sunday, that leaves just two games on the Thanksgiving Day slate. The Texans will battle the Lions in the first game of the day, while the Cowboys will then host the Washington football team. Now, while the winner of the Dallas-Washington game will claim first place in the NFC East, both teams enter this Week 12 matchup with identical 3-7 records. Now, in fact, all four teams playing on Thanksgiving tomorrow have losing records. So onsides or offsides, this is the worst Thanksgiving slate of games in the history of the NFL.
I don't know how to stack it up against all the other. I don't have an app or an application that's going to tell me all the games that have occurred on Thanksgiving. I'm sure you could find it, but I don't have it right in front of me right now. This is why I will say onsides. How do you market these two games? If you're marketing Lions-Texans, how are you getting, if let's say, me in New York to watch that game? Now, I'll be watching because I'm a football fan, but let's say I'm a casual football fan. How do you market Lions-Texans?
Check out young Deshaun Watson as he carves up the Detroit Lions defense.
No. Here's the problem, though, and I love Deshaun Watson. I've seen him so many times. Even the casual football fan has seen him so many times. Now, he's spectacular, but just him on a 3-7 team doesn't get me to watch. Now, if that team maybe was 7-3, all right, I want to continue to see him put up this spectacular season. But with him being 3-7, even though Watson made some great plays last week up against my Pats, it doesn't get me to watch. So now I will ask you the easier question. How do you market Washington and Dallas?
It's a first-place battle down in Big D. Cowboys, Washington, Andy Dalton, Alex Smith. First-place duel on the line.
And then I'll go to Google and I'll go, all right, what's their records? Oh, 3-7, 3-7? Huh? We'll watch the games because we're football fans. But there's no reason to watch these two games, even with NFC least playoff implications on the line. So I go onside. This is the worst Thanksgiving slate of games in the history of the NFL. How the heck do you market this? Matt Patricia needs to get stuffed like a fat Thanksgiving turkey. Deshaun Watson will do it Thursday afternoon on CBS. NFC least showdown. Big Red Andy Dalton with the Dallas Cowboys takes on Alex Smith. We're thankful for Alex Smith to be on the field. Coming up, after you eat your turkey or lasagna, it's the NFL on Fox. Boom.
Maybe you got to get a little spicy like CBS. Like, how will Matt Patricia F this one up this week? This guy has screwed it up. Tune in to see, because you will not want to miss this ending of how he messes up
this game. Lions fans, Thanksgiving get ruined? Will Matt Patricia choke another lead? Find out Thursday on CBS. Go ahead.
All right, Zach. So as you just mentioned before, the first college football playoff rankings for the 2020 season were released last night. No real surprise at the top as Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State took the top four spots. Now, since the inception of the playoff back in 2014, at least one team that was outside of the initial top four rankings made the playoff each and every year. Now, in four of the 6 years, at least two teams that have made the playoff after initially being left out of the top four. So onsides or offsides, two teams currently not in the top four will make the playoff this season.
Offsides. So two teams outside of the top four will get in? No. Alabama's going to be in. I think Ohio State will be in. I'm going to say Clemson beats Notre Dame in the ACC championship, so Clemson gets in. Then it comes down to if Alabama has a loss or not. If they do have a loss, you would imagine that's going to occur not against Auburn, not against Arkansas, against Florida in the SEC title game. So Florida takes down Alabama. I still think Alabama gets in. They put Alabama over a one-loss Notre Dame. And then your four teams would be Florida, in some order, Florida, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. But probably it's going to be these four teams because I don't anticipate Florida taking down Alabama in the SEC title game. And if Notre Dame has one loss against Clemson in the ACC title game, then I think this four is going to stick. I feel pretty confident this four is going to stick.
Offside!
First team in history that would happen. So 2020 has been the year of the unexpected, and that theme has rung true so far, I should say, this football season. We've seen disappointing performances from teams like the Cowboys and players like Lamar Jackson. While on the flip side, we've seen surprising rises from teams like the Dolphins and players like Justin Herbert. So onsides or offsides, Justin Herbert's incredible play this season is the biggest overall surprise in the NFL.
So this is actually a really good question, because if I just quickly go through it, the Bills being 7-3, not surprising. Dolphins being 6-4, that is surprising. Pats being 4-6, not surprising. Really, other than the Raiders, no great surprise in the AFC West other than the play of Justin Herbert. AFC North, nothing terribly surprising unless you want to go the negative direction, the Ravens being 6-4. AFC South, nothing really surprising. Colts Titans maybe better than what you would have thought. Texans being 3-7. I thought they'd be better, but it's not the end of the world. NFC East, everyone stinks. We kind of expected that. Cowboys got killed with injuries. Maybe some surprise that the Cowboys are 3-7 because a lot of people like them. NFC West, Cardinals have been a nice surprise, but I thought they were going to be a good team. Seahawks being 7-3. Rams being 7-3. Seahawks unexpected. Expected. Rams a little bit unexpected. North, Vikings a little disappointing. And the South pretty much has gone the way that you go. I think Herbert's been tremendous. He has. And I didn't think he would be great. I just thought, he'd be up and down like any other rookie. But you asked me if his play this season the biggest overall surprise in the NFL. I'm going to say no. I'm going to go offsides.
Offsides.
I almost went there. But the Rams being 7-3, the Raiders being 6-4, the Ravens surprisingly being 6-4, not a good way. I think there's some of the moves that are on par, if not even better.
And finally, Zach, Bruce Arians continues to deliver interesting quotes about his future Hall of Fame quarterback, and those quotes continued on Tuesday night. In an interview with the Buccaneers team website, Arians was asked if he knows the identity of the team so far through 11 games, and he offered his unfiltered opinion, stating, quote, "Offensively, it's just a matter of each and every week if the quarterback plays well or not, and our job is to make sure he's comfortable and let him play well," end quote. So while obviously Arians is directly placing blame on Brady, the argument could be made that Arians isn't putting Brady in positions to succeed. Well, according to Next Gen Stats, Brady is 0 for his last 19 on deep passes over 20 yards in his last four games. So onsides or offsides? If it gets to the point of Brady versus Arians, the Buccaneers should side with Bruce Arians.
Nah, they're going to side with Brady. It's Brady's team right now. I'll go offsides there. Antonio Brown got there because of Brady. And then if you get rid of Brady, even though he maybe only have another year, two or three left, at most 3 years, who are you bringing in to replace him? So I would say that the players in that locker room would take the quarterback's word over the coach's word.
Offside.
And finally, John Repack on Twitter said, a listener to the show, Zach Gilb, tell Trace, computer programs have been referred to as applications since the Windows came out for the home computer back in the mid-90s. Actually, I think he's right on this. Remember, you have your Windows application and all that stuff. You click on it, and then the computer would start up, all that stuff. So just so you know, the terms originally got applied to computer programs and phone programs. Bill Gates is the one to blame for us not understanding the whole application apps thing. I always knew it was applications. You shorten it to apps, but I still call it applications. So there you go. I don't know if you learned anything from that, but that's at least what
that
Twitter
is. No, I like to know the genesis. That's interesting.
So I'm assuming that is true. But if not, I'm sure someone will correct us. We'll take a break here. When we come on back, Kevin Carter talking college football.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Talk a little college football playoff committee rankings from last night. Number one, Alabama. Number two, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Number three, Clemson. And then number four, The Ohio State University. You then had Texas A&M in at number five. And number six, you had Florida. Now joining us, a man that played for Florida, ended up being the sixth overall pick in the 1995 NFL Draft. Played for the St. Louis Rams, the Tennessee Titans, and did win a Super Bowl as well. Made two Pro Bowls in the National Football League. That, of course, is Kevin Carter, college football on CBS. Kevin, what's happening, my man? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys, too. Thanks for having me.
What game, and I appreciate you coming on, what game do you think I'm most excited for this weekend, if you had to take a guess?
Maybe the Iron Bowl?
Are you an Alabama
person?
No, I'm going to respectfully disagree. I don't mind Alabama. I'm super excited for Michigan and Penn State. I just want to see how much of a disaster that is.
You know what? That's a game that, unfortunately, neither of them can afford to lose. I mean, they couldn't afford to lose the games they've lost thus far this season, let alone be the one that actually ends up at the very bottom of the Big Ten. So, yeah, I get that.
Would you agree that Penn State's been more disappointing this year than Michigan? I know Michigan's 2-3, but Penn State, people thought that this was a legitimate, top 8, top 10 football team before the season started.
Yeah, Penn State really is disappointing. I mean, all of us experts basically had everything wrong. I mean, we thought that this would be the team to challenge Ohio State you know, in the Big Ten East. I mean, this was the team. I mean, they didn't have, you know, quite the numbers they had last season. Of course, you have people like Michael Parsons opting out. But still, I mean, you know, pretty good defensive line. You bring in Kurt Carioca in the offseason, the former Minnesota play caller. He's working, you know, with Sean Clifford and working on their passing game, kind of getting more of a pro-style approach, you know, decision-making. And, you know, the result is they're number 10 in, I think, scoring, 10th or 11th in the Big Ten in scoring offense. And also, they're not doing so well on defense either. They're, like, last in the Big Ten in sacks, last in interceptions. So neither part of this team really is holding up the end of the bargain. And they really, I mean, they don't look uninspired, but they're just making a lot of mistakes. They have a ton of penalties, and they're really playing sloppy football.
If you were Harbaugh, if there was NFL interest, and you assume there would be with what he did in the National Football League the last time, get into a Super Bowl and three NFC championship games, with 1 year left on your deal at Michigan, would you leave your alma mater? Would you leave your school and go back to the pros before it really gets ugly and maybe they have to ax you? Or would you continue to stay through and continue to be the head coach of Michigan?
Well, it all depends on his individual feelings on the situation. I mean, sometimes gratification in your job comes from being in the place that you love and being in a place that means a lot to you. It might mean more to him to make Michigan a winner at some point if they'll have him, regardless of how long it takes him to do so. But, you know, for the quality of life and maybe to do something that's more enjoyable on a day-to-day basis, he might head back to the NFL. I mean, at this point, you as a coach have to look at your coaching style and look at the way that you've been relating to these players and how you've been building it, how you've been delegating to your assistants, and how you've been bringing your team along and presenting them to the rest of the country. And that process, you know, of coach-player engagement, development, evolution of your team, you know, collective football IQ, just really hasn't gone in their favor. I mean, and they've had so many little things happen over the years. I mean, there's some famous plays associated with Michigan football that we keep seeing over and over again that are heartbreaking. You know, it's kind of like when you think about Georgia and how many times, you know, they've lost to Auburn or in big games or had this, the kooky things happen. So, you know, it might mean more to him to stay. That's a personal decision. And I'm really, you know, as a fan, I'm interested to know what his intentions are going forward.
Kevin Carter here with us on the Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. You being a Florida guy, now working for CBS as well, I always look for crazy, just chaotic situations with the college football playoff. How likely do you think it is? Florida right now is number 6, that Florida wins out, and then if they meet up with Alabama in the SEC title game, that they take down Alabama?
Well, they have the offense to do it. I don't think there's a defense, you know, in the country that can stop this team. I mean, offensively, they're just absolutely a juggernaut. Kyle Trask has been masterful at the quarterback position. He's kind of taken this opportunity that he's gotten, that he's waited so long for. I mean, in high school and in college, and he's ran with it. I mean, he's choking the life out of his opportunity, and he's not looking back. So as many as 12 or 13 different targets in the passing game. I mean, making use of, you know, just a fleet of tall, rangy wide receivers, Trevon Grimes, Jacob Copeland, Xavier Henderson, Justin Shorter. Those guys are all over 6'4". I mean, and of course, you know, Kyle Pitts, you know, he's the stud. He's been out for a couple of weeks. You've got the major weapon that lines up everywhere, former high school quarterback Kadarius Toney, who lines up in the slot, running back, quarterback, everywhere on the offense. And then you've got the backs. I mean, you've got Malik Davis. You've got Damian Pierce. You've got, I mean, Naquan Wright. I mean, you've got guys, dudes all over the place that are catching passes. And now that Kyle Pitts has been out, you've got, you know, Kenmore Gamble. You've got Keon Zipperer. They stepped up at tight end. I mean, they've got dudes. So this offense is nearly unstoppable, especially when they drop back to pass. But defensively, that's where I think they don't match up quite with Alabama. I mean, Alabama's defense isn't what it was. But with Dylan Moses back in that lineup, I mean, you've got LeBron Ray and Christian Barmore up front. You've got some quality guys in the back end. This is a good Alabama defense. Not great, but good. And that's where I think, you know, Alabama has the edge if they go, you know, head-to-head. The Florida defense has been better as of late. I mean, two of the last four games, they've given up less than 300 yards on, you know, total offense. but they still give up a lot of points in the first half. They have been really, really good in the second half, though. I mean, they seem to put the clamps on as Florida picks up its scoring in the second half and blows people out, and they're able to hold people off. And then, of course, the complexion, you know, the game changes. People fall behind, and they got to pass. And, you know, Florida finds itself leading the SEC in quarterback sacks. So, you know, who knows how that game will go. It'll come down to special teams and defense.
Does Nick Saban not being on the sideline for the Iron Bowl affect this game because he tested positive for COVID-19? I still think Alabama's going to win going away against Auburn, but does Saban not being there have an effect?
I don't think so. The one thing about Nick Saban, and I played for him during the NFL, the Saban NFL experiment for 2 years down in Miami, but the one thing that I can say is the way he delegates responsibility and the way that he relates to his players, the way that he builds his team and the way he's built Alabama, you know, that that attention to detail day-to-day, self-examining, self-scouting, always looking for a better way to do things. Their collective IQ, you know, as a team is high. They thrive on not making mistakes and basically waiting for you to make a mistake and then capitalizing. You know, this team can play any game you want it to. You know, that they can run the ball, they can throw it, they play good defense. This is a solid team with or without him on the sideline. And I think Sarkisian will do just fine, you know, calling the plays and running the offense. And, you know, defensively, they'll be fine as well. I mean, you know, if you think Nick Saban won't be involved or coaching from his, you know, pool house, you're wrong.
Yeah, 100%. It wouldn't surprise me if he has some communication device into the sideline for the Iron Bowl as well. Kevin Carter
sure.
here with us. So you played with Saban, like you said, in Miami with the Dolphins. You guys were 9-7, 6-10. How do you kind of recap that experience seeing the NFL side of Nick Saban?
You know, as a person, it was refreshing. I was in my 11th year.
Wow.
And I knew my responsibility. I was actually very excited because I'd never played in what was, you know, some of the time a 3-4 defense, and it was a challenge. It was something that I looked forward to and I relished at that point in my career. It was a fun defense because it was a hybrid 3-4, 4-3 package. I got the chance to, you know, do some hardcore 2-gapping, you know, down into 5 technique and making Jason Taylor, you know, win Defensive Player of the Year 2 years in a row.
So you take credit for that.
Zach Thomas. Oh, yeah. And, you know, and sending Zach Thomas to the Pro Bowl. And, you know, those are some great days. But I think the best thing about it was our actual defensive line room. I mean, we had a bunch of old, crusty guys in there. It was myself and Keith Traylor, Bonnie Holiday, Jason Taylor, David Bowens, Tim Bowens. I mean, we had dudes in our room, and it was, you know, Jeff Scanina. I mean, we just had a great time on a daily basis, and our defensive line coach was Dan Quinn. So we had a lot of knowledge on that side of the ball. Dom Capers ran the defense. Will Muschamp coached the DBs. I mean, we were a top five defense both of those years. But, you know, offensively, we just couldn't find a quarterback.
Can you imagine if Drew Brees ended up going to Miami?
Completely rewriting the history of what would have happened, I am sure. I might have retired a Miami Dolphin because there's no way I would have left if Drew Brees had come in. And that's another story in and of itself that I'd love to tell you sometime.
If Brees was there, well, we have time, but if Brees was there, what does football look like right now?
The Miami Dolphins aren't, you know, on their ever – their ever-challenging quest of finding another franchise quarterback. I mean, since Dan Marino or maybe Jay Fiedler, you know, this is a totally different, I think, organization. You know, had he gotten Drew Brees, I'm not sure he would have returned to college so quickly. There were more problems than just our quarterback. I mean, obviously, you know, Nick Saban is an excellent college coach, but there was some criticism, you know, even within the team, and just around the league and experts looking in as to his coaching style and his approach. It was very college-esque, and that doesn't work with grown men who have mortgages and children. But I was an older guy at the time. I mean, I was in my 11th year, and, man, you know, I loved having conversations with the guy. I loved his coaching style. I loved the way he related to a certain group of us anyway. I mean, it was hard for him, you know, not to regard the guys like they were on scholarship. And I think that was kind of the issue. It was more of a professionalism thing. I think when you're coaching grown men, you've got to, you know, treat them more as equals and gain their trust and, you know, get on the same page and convince them that their actions, what they do on a daily basis in every game, every snap, every play, is the difference between winning and losing. And that's a lot of trust, and it's a lot of chemistry that you have to build. And I think that process is light years different than it is in college. And that's what he would have had to adjust to be successful.
In that moment when the whole failed physical thing happened with Drew Brees, was there like a feeling in the locker room of like, man, there was a missed opportunity? Because at the time, no one knew Drew Brees was going to turn into an all-time great quarterback. But did you guys see something differently as players maybe?
No, we knew. I mean, he had a group of us that he would talk to. He called it his peer group, and it was guys like myself and Jason Taylor, Junior Seau, you know, guys that were older that had 10 or more years in the league. And he called us in his office and he says, "Look, we got an opportunity, you know, to get two quarterbacks. I want to get your feel on this." And I like that. I mean, I like the fact that he consulted his players, you know, the guys that he trusted and knew were in it to win it. And we told him flat out in his office, we're like, "Drew Brees, man, all day, every day." And we ended up getting Dante Culpepper instead. And that was, I think, more of an organization decision. And I think that's where Nick Saban and the Miami Dolphins sort of parted ways on just an active element of control. And I think that's also that what had a lot to do with the fact that, you know, Nick Saban didn't stay in the NFL, because if you can't, you know, have control over the decisions of personnel and really affect how the GM operates and builds your team, and if you're not on the same page with that person, then there can be a problem.
Is this going to be the final four, maybe in a different order, but will this be the four teams at the end of the year, the college football season, Kevin Carter, that we saw last night?
It's hard not to see these four teams making it. You know, obviously, you know, Notre Dame is going to be faced with Clemson at the end of the season if they keep on going and playing the kind of ball that they've played. But, you know, they're going to have Trevor Lawrence in the lineup when they do. And that may be a different outcome. I mean, the only reason, you know, we're talking about DJ Uiagalelei, you know, relinquishing play in lieu of how well he's done. I mean, he's been unbelievable filling in for Trevor Lawrence. But the only reason we kind of write him off is because Trevor Lawrence is Trevor Lawrence. And we know what he can do, and we know how he galvanizes that team. So if Notre Dame loses the ACC championship game, you know, they'll have one loss on the season, and it'll be to one of those top four teams. They'll be in the same boat, you know, as Texas A&M if Texas A&M wins out. And, you know, that could be interesting. So that's the only scenario maybe where they see a Texas A&M team that has a loss, you know, its only loss in the season to an Alabama, or maybe if Florida finds a way to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game, then I think, you know, obviously there's going to be some sort of shift, or because whoever wins the SEC is getting in, period. So it kind of leaves those other teams like Texas A&M and Notre Dame kind of on the outside if Notre Dame happens to lose to Clemson. So there are a bunch of different scenarios, but, you know, the one thing I like about the college football playoff rankings is the committee, you know, they take a lot of heat and slack for their rankings, but their rankings are usually set up like dominoes as to where the circumstances of the games usually write the script of how it's supposed to go. And not a lot of people can disagree when the Final Four are finally posted at the end of the year.
Kevin Carter, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much. This was great.
Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
The Mets' new owner, Steve Cohen, is it's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. He did an interview today with a local TV station in New York. It's actually the Mets station, SNY. So we knew that Steve Cohen once bought, who's the richest owner now in Major League Baseball, he bought a Giacometti pointing man statue for like 140-something million. It was more than any free agent the Mets have ever purchased, you know, ever signed. And then he did something very similar. I forget the exact dollar amount, but it was more than what the Mets ever paid for with Picasso's Le Rêve. In this interview tonight, because Steve Cohen grew up as a Met fan. He revealed that he bought the Bill Buckner botch ball when Mookie Wilson hit a little roller down the first baseline. How much do you think Steve Cohen, now the owner of the Mets, who is going to place this baseball in the Mets museum at Citi Field, how much do you think he purchased that baseball for?
$500,000.
Pretty close. $418,000 for a baseball.
Crazy, right?
Well, that to him is chump change.
That is, you know, just roll over. What's in the pocket today? Oh, all right, $400K, right. No problem.
How about that? Can the Mets get it going here? Can I get a Bauer? Can I get a Springer? Can I get Lindor via trade? Can we start getting some pieces to Flushing? Por favor. Am I going to be happy by the end of this offseason, or do you think it's going to be...
100%.
You think it's going to be aggressive... I got to tell everyone, screw you. I'm the new sheriff in town.
I think this is the first time they will deliver on a promise. We will see a Mets team we've never seen before.
So I still kind of operate under the old ownership where you just kind of still expect to be disappointed. But now I am feeling the excitement, and I love me some Stevie Cohen. How about Kevin Carter? Talking about, you know, bring it back up and us discuss when he played for the Dolphins, the decision of the Miami Dolphins to pass up on Drew Brees, who they wanted, and then he failed the physical, so they traded a second-round pick to go get Dante Culpepper. You know, you look back at that. Three things I think of right away. Number one, you would have had Brady and Brees in the same division a whole lot earlier. Number two, like we mentioned, Saban was, what, 9-7 and then 6-10 in his 2 years in the NFL? If he had Drew Brees, would Drew Brees still have become an all-time great quarterback? But where's Nick Saban coaching right now if Drew Brees was the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins and had a lot of success? And then the other part of it, who dat say they're going to beat them Saints? They may not ever have a Super Bowl. And if Sean Payton doesn't have Drew Brees, and Sean Payton's a good coach, what would Sean Payton have become? That is one of the all-time great. What if the Miami Dolphins elected to say, screw the medical, screw the failed physical, we're going to go on out there and still bring in Drew Brees? There's a lot of moving pieces to that. I would have, and ooh, that'd be a good poll question one day. Which one is the most interesting storyline out of that? The interesting change? Because you could say maybe Saban is in Alabama right now. You could say maybe Sean Payton is not with the Saints and doesn't have a Super Bowl. And then who knows? If that ended up being an all-time great rivalry, Dolphins and Patriots, with Brady and Brees, maybe Brady has a Super Bowl or two fewer than what he has right now. That question and that scenario, it makes you wonder a lot of different ways. And then also, does Drew Brees find the success in Miami that he found in New Orleans? Because right now, when Drew Brees made that decision back in 2006 to go over to the Saints, you could not have predicted that Drew Brees was going to turn out to be an all-time great quarterback. You couldn't predict that he was going to lead the league in the history of passing yards. And to be fair, you couldn't predict that he was going to win a Super Bowl in New Orleans. And look what happened, where Drew Brees, in all honesty, should have ended up with the Miami Dolphins. That's wild. It affects Belichick. It affects Alabama. It affects Sean Payton. It affects Tom Brady. There's a lot of pieces right there to kind of unfold and think about. That's got to be a 30 for 30 one day. What if I told you that the Miami Dolphins, having a failed physical, changed the direction of not only their franchise, but the National Football League? Right? That's a fair 30 for 30. What if I told you?
I like that. Yeah, that would be...
They got to do that one day.
Talk about the puzzle pieces getting moved around. Ooh. Ooh.
I think we need a QB documentary of the last 20 years of the quarterback position. You get Favre, you get Rodgers, I would love a roundtable discussion. Favre, Rodgers, Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes now, Russell Wilson. Think about the quarterbacks that we've seen the last 20 years. Now, the closest thing you'll get to that was when Brady and Favre was together with Belichick for that NFL top 100 all-time team. That would be content that I would crave. You get me all the great quarterbacks. I'm not just talking, I don't want good, I don't want very good. The all-time great quarterbacks in the last 20 years of the National Football League. Just sit around, talk chop, and just have that broadcasted. I'd be all game for that. And just throw out scenarios like that. You know, Tom, what happens if Drew Bledsoe never got hurt? Breeze, what happens if you sign with the Dolphins? Peyton, what happens if you didn't suffer the neck injury and the Colts take Luck? Do you have a second Super Bowl ring? Favre, what happens if the Packers never drafted Rodgers? What happens to Rodgers if he never gets drafted by the Packers? So many things. And here would be the most, here would be the toughest one. Hey, Mahomes. This would be the toughest for Bears fans. Not Mahomes. I still think Mahomes would have been great. Mahomes, what happens to you on the Bears? Bears fans would cringe. Oh, Mitch Trubisky, no! Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, Gus Frerotte joins us. It's a Football Friday on a Wednesday because we're off Thursday, Friday. He joins us next. We have a little new wrinkle to the picks. We're doing five picks this week. You don't want to miss it. Coming back in five.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.